Welcome to the Neurology Live Mind Moments podcast. Tune in to hear leaders in neurology sound off on topics that impact your clinical practice. I'm your host, Marco Meglio, editor with Neurology Live. In this episode, we sat down with Dr. Lawrence Robinson, a senior scientist at Sunnybrook Research Institute, to discuss his presentation from the 2024 AANEM annual meeting focused on educating the next generation of neuromuscular and electric diagnostic practitioners. In the discussion, Robinson discussed adapting to new learning styles, the benefits of flipped classrooms, and the impact of technology on education and practice. In addition, he touched upon the personal connections and humor in teaching, as well as the ways to improve critical evaluation skills. Let's dive in.
Yeah, I've been interested in education for a number of years. I train people, that's part of what I do, train people how to do electrodiagnostic medicine. And I've noticed that things have changed. So when I went to medical school, we had three sources of information. We had textbooks, we had lectures, and we had our clinical supervisors. And they were generally pretty reliable sources. The institutions that vetted them were reliable, and we could, you know, generally assume that what they told us was generally true. Today's learners are totally different. They have so many resources. They have expectations around immediate access technology. They just pull out their phone. They can pull up 100 or 1,000 different things. They can do a Google search. They watch videos. They have so many social media resources that it's a changed world. While they do have a lot more information, they also have conflicting information. How do you know that first page in your Google search is really what you should be looking at? How do you prevent confirmation bias, that your initial idea, you can find some article or some little posting that confirms what you thought? And today's learners are also confronted with a shorter attention span because they're used to little TikTok videos that, you know, it's not the same thing as reading a whole textbook chapter. And the TikTok video may not be the appropriate thing. And they have less ability to do critical thinking, which is a skill that's really needed for electrodiagnosis. So today's learners are very different. As a baby boomer, I think we just have to learn to change to meet the needs of today's learners. So that means using multimedia resources. It means teaching critical thinking in ways that we hadn't done before. It means using standardized testing in ways that we hadn't really relied on before. And ultimately just adapt with the time.
Today's learners are very different from previous generations. There are high expectations regarding immediate access to information, technology, and social media present at all times, and some may have a diminished attention span. Here's Robinson as he describes some of the challenges with educating the next generation of neuromuscular and electrodiagnostic practitioners.
I think some of the challenges, probably the biggest one, is teaching critical thinking. How to sort through all the information that you might have and figure out what's relevant, what's appropriate, what's reliable. And we do have some tools to do that. One tool that I mentioned is the 1 minute preceptor, where you ask people to give a commitment to an answer, explain why, and then you might probe for more supporting evidence. And then ultimately you give them feedback. What did they do well? What did they do wrong? And try to teach them general principles. Another challenge is teaching them how to process information. And for that, I think what we can do is think out loud a lot more. As teachers, we generally think a lot internally. We don't vocalize what we're thinking. If we can think out loud about our uncertainty, our decision-making process, how we gather information, how we come to a conclusion, I think that would be really helpful to learners. And it's a challenge, but it's one that I think we can meet. It means being comfortable with living with uncertainty. We don't know the diagnosis yet, or we don't know what that waveform is, and also expressing that uncertainty to our trainees.
Despite some of the differences with this next generation of learners, there are still a lot of great opportunities to continue to advance neuromuscular medicine for the better. These opportunities may be aided by the significant progress in diagnostic capabilities and the technology at clinicians' disposal. Here's Robinson as he discusses the greatest potential for this next generation of learners.
Well, one theme for our conference has been the confluence of two pipelines. So that learner part that we've been talking about, but also all the new technologies that are coming down the line. So some great opportunities around artificial intelligence. How is that going to fit in? And there are opportunities around documentation, around diagnosis that we didn't have years ago. There's opportunities for new types of learning. So we were just at a session on looking at musculoskeletal mimics of radiculopathy. And there's a lot of physical exam findings. Well, in the old days, you had to find someone who knew how to do that, have them show you and teach you. Now you can go on YouTube and find someone who shows you how to do those exam findings. So that's a great new opportunity. And I guess just the availability of information is a great opportunity. When I was in training, we had to go to the library, actually drive to the physical library, go to the Index Medicus, find a citation, and then go find the journal in another part of the library and read it or copy it. Whereas today, we can find everything immediately available online.
We're going to take a quick break from our conversation with Dr. Robinson to keep you up to date on the latest developments in neurology. Welcome to the Neurology News Minute. Here's what you may have missed since our last episode. First, on October 22nd, Immunic announced that an independent data monitoring committee review of unblinded data from its Phase 3 ENSURE program assessing vidofludimus calcium in patients with relapsing MS was positive, advising that the trial should continue as planned. ENSURE, which includes two Phase 3 trials, uses time to first relapse up to 72 weeks as the primary endpoint. Days later, new reported data from the Galileo 1 trial, a phase 1-2 study, showed that treatment with FLT201, an AAV gene therapy candidate, resulted in durable reductions in GBA1 and improvements in maintenance in blood counts and organ volume in patients with Gaucher disease. Spur Therapeutics, the drug's manufacturer, plans to release more data in the first half of 2025 and begin a phase 3 trial later that year. And finally, on October 29th at the 2024 Clinical Trials on Alzheimer's Disease, or CTAD, conference, new data from the phase 3b Trailblazer AL6 study showed that a new enhanced titration of donanemab resulted in reduced risk of amyloid-related imaging abnormalities. All told, patients on this new dosing had a 41% reduction in the relative risk of ARIA compared with its standard dosing. For more information about these stories, head to neurologylive.com, or you can check out the corresponding link in the show notes. And now, back to our conversation with Dr. Robinson. There are several different styles and approaches to teaching neuromuscular medicine, including a flipped classroom. A flipped classroom allows learners to prepare curriculum ahead of time, allowing for in-person engagement and problem-solving. In our discussion, Robinson discusses the ins and outs of a flipped classroom and why clinicians should consider adopting this approach.
The flipped classroom has really been something that's developed over the last decade or two, and I just want to contrast that with a conventional lecture. So in the conventional classroom or lecture, the speaker prepares their PowerPoint slides, they prepare their lecture, they'll talk for 45, 50, 55 minutes, maybe the whole hour, and go through all their slides. What does the learner do? The learner sits and listens, maybe takes notes, maybe looks like they're paying attention, probably thinking about other things like what am I going to get for dinner tonight, and what did my spouse mean when he or she said everything was fine, and you're just going through all these other thoughts in your mind. And in the end, you might take home three teaching points, but you don't retain a big proportion of what you have heard. The flipped classroom means that you flip the order. So the learner prepares ahead of time, and we'll give the learner some preparatory materials. It could be review a chapter, or go through a review paper, or go through multimedia materials. But that's all before the in-person time. Then the in-person time is covering the main points of that review material. You know, what were the major points that you learned from that? Asking the learner questions to verify that they actually do understand the information, and answering their questions that they might have about the information. And that's more effective at promoting self-directed learning. It's more effective at retaining the information. Learners are much more actively participating in the process. And it actually takes less time that way, too. you're not giving the 1 hour lecture. They've done all that learning ahead of time, and you're spending maybe 15 to 30 minutes going through the major points, answering questions and asking them questions. So I really encourage people to strongly consider a flipped classroom, give people the materials ahead of time, and have that in-person discussion focus on reviewing those materials.
Over the years, the neuromuscular landscape has gone from a diagnostic one to a therapeutic specialty. While there are not treatments for every disease, the overall understanding of these disorders and their pathology is greatly improved. Here's Robinson on the outlook of how neuromuscular medicine may change in the coming years.
Yeah, it's a really interesting question, and there's a couple of things I've seen. One is that patients come to their appointments with a lot more education. So I have some videos on YouTube that are publicly available from lectures I've given, like medical lectures, not public lectures. They've already seen those. They know what I'm going to say. They've reviewed a lot of the information. They've looked up their disorder online. They come with a lot of pre-knowledge, some of it correct, some of it incorrect, and that's really changed the game because you're starting from a different point. Another evolution has been medical imaging technology, which has been in some ways good. We can see things that we couldn't see before, but in some ways challenging because most imaging will show some little abnormality that you don't really know what to make of it. Lumbar and cervical spine imaging is a great example. I almost never get back a normal MRI result. You always have some degenerative changes, and so patients come in concerned about the changes they saw in the MRI, and we have to explain to them that these are just normal changes. In fact, there's an acronym, don't become a vomit, V-O-M-I-T, victim of medical imaging technology, because you might see some changes on your imaging and then go do further testing, maybe do some treatment, and then sustain ill effects from that further investigation or further treatment. So that's really changed things, I think, over the years, especially as imaging expands over time.
Wrapping up our discussion with Dr. Robinson, we asked if there were any lingering thoughts on the topic of educating the next generation of neuromuscular practitioners. For one last time, here's Dr. Robinson on his final thoughts.
I guess I would advocate for building a strong personal relationship with your trainees and your team around education. And there's a couple of ways to do that. One is to just develop a very explicit orientation at the start. Tell people what you expect from them. What are the goals of the rotation? And I often ask them three questions. So what did you major in undergraduate? That gives me a sense of what they might know or might be interested in. What are your goals of the rotation? We can focus on those. And then what are you interested outside of medicine? And that gives an ability to connect over sports or food or fountain pens or bicycling, whatever it is that we can connect on. So that builds a connection. And the other thing to build a connection is the use of humor in education. Humor can be very effectively used. It can relieve stress and negative emotions. It can build the team camaraderie and unity. And it can just make learning fun. So I would encourage you to consider the use of humor in your educational endeavors.
Thanks for listening to this episode of the Neurology Live Mind Moments podcast. To support the show, be sure to rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. And as always, for more neurology news and expert-driven content, visit neurologylive.com.